they're like a little rock at first, so I got to kind of like knead them to soften it up. That's going to be the cold open.
Yeah, there we go.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Human Reaction, your weekly source for independent commentary on cultural news and politics. David, it's good to be back in the room with you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back in the studio on a Tuesday. Let's go.
I love it.
It's good to see you, man.
Good. Good to see you, too. Yeah. And we have a special guest with us today. Do you want to introduce her?
Yeah, introducing Cheryl Tuskin, who does school choice stuff.
School
choice expert? It's the age of experts, so I'm claiming you're an expert now. An expert now.
I am an expert.
You have been granted credentials by Human Reaction.
I do have a title. It's Education Outreach Coordinator. Fantastic. So I do coordinate the outreach of education.
And that's what she's going to do today, is tell us all about school choice. Specifically, we're talking about the new environment on school choice and how, after all these years of like suffering to try to get something on the ground, we're getting all these wins. And just now, just as we're starting to win, all these people from the right wing start attacking the school choice movement. So we're going to get into that, because that's like the moment. And this is, and it's like, we're 5 yards from the touchdown, guys. We got up to 15 states now have universal school choice. We covered that a couple episodes ago. And now is when we get stabbed in the back by supposed conservatives.
Can I just say, this feels like a trend? Like, this is happening on multiple issues where the right, like, there's this faction of the right that's coming out against the broader right on issues that they should be for.
Right.
Are you guys noticing that?
Yeah, I think the right is having a lot of infighting. There's a lot of stuff that we're trying to figure out, from the woke right stuff to what do we think about foreign policy to school choice. Like, we were always for school choice, and now we're not for school choice. It's a very interesting thing. So we're wrestling with a lot of different concepts as we're, you know, dealing with that neocon faction and we need to go America first. And so there's a lot there, but these are good conversations worth having.
100%.
For sure.
So first off, who are you and what's your story, you know, into school choice? How did you wind up here?
Yeah, so I am actually an unwilling homeschooling mom. Like, I got into this whole thing not because I necessarily wanted to. I learned about it. I actually read a book called Dumbing Us Down by John Taylor Gatto. And he was a multiple year scholar for, you know, the state of New York. Mm-hmm. He was a the state top teacher of the year a couple times in a row. And he was given these students who were failing, and they were about to drop out. And he totally was given the freedom to figure out what to do and how to get them, like, to not drop out and to actually do something, finish their life. And he gave them a lot of hands-on sort of things, a lot of work and life relationship stuff. Hmm. And he realized that the way that we were educating was dumbing them down. It, like, they weren't actually being educated, and it was stifling their natural desire to learn and to innovate. And so he gave them skills, and then he said, you know what? Actually, I think homeschooling is actually a much better way, so that you can allow the child to follow the direction that they are naturally geared toward. So I had that idea in the back of my head, like, okay, this is a good idea. I like the concept of homeschooling. I don't particularly think that homeschooling is the best for me because of my own temperament. Am I going to follow through? But I always didn't like, I don't know. I just didn't like school myself at all. Mm. So,
but you're a physics?
Yes. So yes, I'm one of those people that you need to give me the why. You need to tell me why I need to know about Ponce de Leon and why he traveled and why I need to know the year that he went across the sea.
Mm, like, right.
Who cares? When I was in fifth grade, I got four D's in one quarter. And my parents thought that I was stupid. They were like, we need to do an IQ test. What is the matter? And I just didn't care. Mm. And there were other things going on. You know, I was being picked on and bullied. And then fast forward into high school, and I realized I should probably get good grades so I can go to college, so I can move out of my parents' house. Mm. So I got straight A's for the first time in the middle of my junior year. went to college. I got into a college, and I was like, meh, I don't really want to be here, but it moved me across the country. I chose physics because it was something that was actually interesting, and I can actually see the reason why you need math. Mm. Didn't see any reason for math other than balancing a checkbook. And then actually found an application for it, which was really good. So I'm one of those people who I didn't like, you know, standard education. I, you know, was in a box. I was underutilized, you know, like, but then once I did it, and found a path to go, I excelled. Mm. So
it seems to me that every kid is, you know, they get started out there, they just love to learn just innately on some level. I mean, maybe not every kid, but most kids. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the age of awareness, the sub-degree, where you're like, why do I need to learn this? And then if the system doesn't like say, well, here's all the amazing things you can do with the things that we're trying to teach you.
Yeah.
If it's just like, well, because you have to, because otherwise, you know,
yeah,
you're truant and you go to jail, or, you know, because we said so, otherwise you're going to have a bad life. Those are not the kind of concepts are going to motivate anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also was the one who just filled in the bubbles on the standardized tests because I could never get it done in time. And so I just filled out the bubbles.
Okay. So would you mix and match, or would you just go C down the line?
No, I tried to make some kind of like, cool, you know, random assortment of answers.
That's spelling out letters with it?
But then, you know, then my parents would get in and they'd be like, oh my gosh, my kid is so dumb. What is wrong with her? It's like, no, I'm just not applying myself. I was actually quite smart.
So is that a product of a broken public education system that they're not inspiring kids to want to learn?
Well, oddly enough, I was actually in Catholic school from first through sixth grade. And so a lot of this story I'm telling you is from those years. Mm. And then I went into public school from seventh grade on. But I think that overall, you know, there's a lack of excitement in it. You're sitting in desks in rows. Like, I don't learn very well when I'm just sitting still, when I'm sitting and blocked down here. I'm not an audio learner. Like, I need to be moving. I need to be doing. And I think that in education, we don't take all those factors into consideration. Like, we can talk about boys and the ADHD stuff, over prescribing them. Like, they need to move. When I finally decided to homeschool my kids, I incorporated a lot of movement into their learning. So when we were practicing spelling, we would be tossing the ball back and forth as we spelled a word. I'd say the first letter, toss the ball, he'd say the next letter, and back and forth. Mm. I'd make them do push-ups while they're doing their spelling or their math facts, things like that, because I know that boys are physical. I know that they need to do things like that. And I absorb so much more information when I'm actually in movement. So when I'm walking, exercising, doing things like that.
Yeah, that touches like the core why of school choice, right? I mean, that every kid's an individual with unique needs and aptitudes. And ultimately, your education shouldn't be like stamping you into a box. It should be trying to discover the best route to realize the potential of the individual child, not this collectivist stand on top, look at what society needs, and like, we're going to design a system to get what society needs. Because what society is made up of
people,
individuals, right? So if at the end of the day, you're not designing things that fit those people instead of trying to fit the people into the system, what you're going to get is a lot of people are going to fall outside that box, and they're going to be victimized by that system.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think about that when we're looking at like the prescription for high school science. Why do we have this particular model for science? And it's all geared towards sending 100% of kids straight into college to go into a STEM field, probably. But why are we doing it this way? Like, is it necessary for them to take earth science, then biology with a lab, then chemistry with a lab, then physics with a lab? Mm-hmm. Is that the best route for every student? What about a musician where science and mathematics might not come very easily, and they might be pounding their head against the wall when they are a beautiful violinist? Mm-hmm. And should we, you know, tailor their education towards the arts? I think that would probably be better serving to them and to society. So you're not creating like these kids who would just feel like they're incredibly stupid because you're sending them down a path where they're not necessarily going to succeed.
Yeah, at some level, right? I mean, so the argument is often something like, well, we need a floor, right? Because I don't, and what do they always say? It's like, because I don't want my neighbors to be dummies, right? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
But noting that the current system is producing the flat earth movement. Have we raised that floor?
Hold on, hold on. We can't just straw man the current system like that. We don't know. Maybe some of the flat earthers went to homeschool. We can't do that, David.
Well, I'm sure they're representative of the overall demographic,
that's
right?
That's fair. Probably which representative.
Probably 90% public school. Probably therefore, true. Come on. I'm just saying, like, you know, mandatory science education. Apparently, it doesn't work the way you think it does. Maybe it doesn't actually produce everyone knowing science really well. Maybe most people just sit through because it's not their interest and it blows right by them. Mm-hmm. And they just do the absolute minimum and they get through it because it's not their passion.
That was me in physics.
Yeah.
Not interested.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay at it. Decent. But mm-hmm. just it wasn't what I was into.
I had a taste of physics in eighth grade and it sucked. I hated it. Mm. But it was because my math was not strong and... Mm. Yeah.
So to some degree, I mean, every student needs a base level of understanding of things, right? Balancing a checkbook, whatever. Basic life skills. But yep. to decide you're going to go do all these upper level science classes for everybody is not necessarily yeah. the right choice.
And so that's where the idea of customization comes in. And that's why school choice is so important, is that you can now go outside the system and say, you know what, this is it's a very difficult system, the public school system, to tailor things. And they're doing some things, you know, they're bringing more like career readiness and tech training into high schools. And that's a good thing. But you can, as a parent, you can customize. And for me, I really wanted them to have a solid education when it came to personal finance and take the Dave Ramsey, you know, homeschool course for personal finance, which was huge on my bucket list, and then also have a really good solid civics curriculum and understand their relationship between you know, their life as a citizen in the United States of America and the freedoms that we have, that you get one vote, and that is an honor and a privilege. So those are my two top level things. But then you can backfill and look at the rest of the stuff. Do I want my kids to have X number of years of science, or do I want them to go, you know, and have maybe a more of an overview and do a few years of lab work, but then customize and go into other sorts of things.
For sure.
Yeah. So we kind of touched on it, but I want to circle back around it because I don't think it could be made strong enough. What's happened with public education, right? Like right now there's a lot of discontent and people are kind of going a different direction, as we've seen by the explosion of homeschool. So like, what's the case against public education beyond it fitting people into box? Is the results good? I mean, my flat earth case might not be the strongest, but you see what I mean?
That's right.
Yeah. So there's actually been a downward trajectory in everything. You know, we're talking about, you know, dismantling the Department of Education, which was only brought in the late 70s. So mm-hmm. it's only been around for like 40 years. And since that began, and the whole point was to, you know, bring better outcomes out of the public schools, our outcomes have actually continued a downward trajectory the whole time. And so there's several different layers to it. They've kind of gone back and forth between using a phonics-based method of teaching reading and then going back to the memorizing the words. They call that the whole language model. And that's not actually helping kids. Some studies show that it was actually inducing dyslexia, and children can be remedied from that. As a whole, you know, I'm not a special education instructor at all, but there are some connection between, you know, forcing kids to have like memorize words when we have a phonetic language.
Right.
We have letters that go together and they make certain sounds. So there's that level. And then we don't have competition. We have, you know, the teachers' unions who aren't incentivized to do a good job, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. You have some teachers who might be put on a bench for years as they are having investigations happen, and they continue to get paid. So you can't fire these people for doing, you know, poorly mm-hmm. or for even being abusive sometimes.
Or just as bad, not paying your best teachers more because right. it's tied to how long you've been a teacher and how right. many education credentials you have, right? So if you get a master's degree, you get more money, which I could see that there's like a business case for that. But even if you have a master's degree, but none of your students are inspired to learn and aren't retaining information because you're just doing it by route.
Right.
Like, why are we paying you more?
Yeah. I'm sure you guys had the you know, the football coach who taught high school government, and he would give you maps to color in high school, right? Like we had teachers like that. So to be fair, we had a really great track coach who was a really good math teacher, but we did have those like, you know, right.
I'm picturing I'm picturing the Ben Stein character from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh yeah,
Bueller. You know, just so uninspired. It's just like
every high schooler's like stereotype of a bad teacher.
Oh yeah,
that one. Yeah,
for sure.
So what? Okay, so that said, we kind of talk about school choice in terms of it offers customized education. What's it like as a policy? What does that mean to give students education? Like, how do you get there? How do you get to education choice?
So I think the biggest thing, so there's many, many different levels of school choice. So it started with the voucher systems where you are allowing children, usually in low-income failing public schools, to take basically like a coupon and then go into a different school and say, here's my payment coupon from the government so I can go to a better school with better better systems. So that could be a private school. Then we had the explosion of the charter school movement, which are public schools. And they are publicly funded, but they are autonomous and they have a lot more freedom to customize the way that they learn and teach and structure. And they actually have to show outcomes. Mm-hmm. Their charter can actually be revoked if they're not doing very well. And there have been schools that have shut down.
Usually that's a private provider, though. It's like a private business that is the charter. Unless it's run by the school. I mean, schools can start charters too, but oftentimes the contentious part is where a private provider is taking that public money, but they accept everybody who applies and it operates like a public school.
Yeah, it's a little bit of semantics. I mean, every single state has a different sort of thing, and Montana just came online with having charter schools just 2 years ago, and we don't have really any yet. But every state has a different model in the way that they structure it. But they are everyone is able to come, you know, and they'll go to like a lottery system if they max out their number of seats. And then and they have, you know, funding that comes straight from the state as well to fund them.
Mm-hmm. And so, vouchers, charter. And then you have education savings accounts, which are different than vouchers, importantly.
They are, yeah. They're a totally different sort of entity where there's actually money given directly into either they put money onto a debit card or into an account where parents can get their educational expenses reimbursed to them. So this is where that customized learning comes in and where you can pick and choose. So you can use a tutor. So for instance, we used a tutor for our science classes because I didn't want to blow things up in my house for chemistry. And I could get that reimbursed if I had an ESA for my kids. Mm. Or you can use that for private school tuition. So under the realm, the umbrella of education freedom, there's a lot of options between private schools, tutors, microschooling, scholarships, tax credit scholarships, and things like that.
What I like about ESAs especially, just thinking about it economically, is that it provides an incentive not for private schools to not explode their tuition costs, right?
Yeah.
Because This is typical of like subsidizing college tuition and college loans is that it creates an incentive for the supplier once you've subsidized demand to increase prices. So by making it per dollar, then you could say like, wait, I'm not going to go to that school. This one's just as good and it's $1,000 cheaper. So now I can spend that extra money on supplemental learning programs or other things that help my kid.
Yeah. And what we've seen with states that have ESAs is that private schools actually try to keep their tuition in that realm of the ESA. And we don't see an explosion of their tuition prices, which is really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a common myth.
It seems like there's a common argument that I've heard that's sort of pro public school that says that if school choice exists, people will leave the public school, those tax dollars will leave the public school system or in that district, and that school will suffer and, you know, education outcomes will go down. How should people be thinking about that? Is that true?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. A lot of people do make that point, but right now there already are people who are out of system who have chosen to go to private school or to homeschool. So already, you know, they're out of system. Now, a good point that doesn't get made a whole lot is that they are not, they do not get to lay claim on every single student.
Right.
You know, like parents can decide where they want to go. And there are going to be switching costs. But what we see, especially in places like Arizona, is that as choice is allowed to flourish, those schools actually get better and that competition is actually good for the school systems. And those public schools, actually their test scores go up and most, by and large, most people are not going to leave the, their zip code zoned boundary lines because it's convenient for them. They get transportation. It works for them, for most people.
And interesting. So you actually see that when students leave and the and a public school might feel pressure from that, that they actually work to innovate and do things to bring people back and be competitive?
They sure do.
Well, is that and you have more resources from your remaining children to focus on, right? So every teacher has the same gripe, which is if class sizes are really big, I can't focus on the kids who are on the bottom half of the class. So you mm-hmm. focus in the middle and you focus on your top tier kids. Mm-hmm. If the top tier kids, or even if a range of top tier, middle, and bottom kids all go to other alternatives because that fits their learning style better, or if it's their belief systems better, or whatever reason it is, your remaining resources still are there to be able to teach and focus on those kids. It also means less kids means less administrative costs because you don't have as many kids to administrate on. So you could also be more efficient with your budget. You provide, that's the nature of prices, that they create incentives for better outcomes and better efficiency.
Awesome.
And that's really what school choice, especially ESAs, provide, is those incentive structures that are similar to but not the same as how price mechanisms work in the private sector generally.
Very cool.
So we would anticipate those outcomes by economic theory. And then what's great is since this since education choice, universal education choice, has exploded so much, we can now test that. And we've seen that in multiple states like Florida and Arizona, and these states, they are now doing studies on what is the education outcome of public school kids, and they also improve, which is really encouraging.
Yeah. There's a brand new study that just came out showing Ohio's school choice voucher system of having, you know, they're years down the road now, and they have all this data, and they just did a deep analysis of it, and that those students are doing very well, and their outcomes have been great. So,
awesome. Our goal is to get into the myths and bust some myths. We got a myth buster here. So let's do this. So we're going to start with the myths of the left, and we got this clip from Now This, which is, I mean, not news, but they kind of pretend to be news.
Sort of like BuzzFeed?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a new BuzzFeed.
Okay.
We need to make sure that we have school choice.
More charter schools and more Renaissance schools and more public school choice.
We didn't just talk about universal school choice. We enacted universal school choice.
So what exactly is school choice? On the surface, school choice sounds like a positive thing, but its origins and implications are much more sinister. Let's break it down. School choice refers to programs and policies that allow families to use public money through vouchers to access schools beyond their local options, including private schools. However, this practice takes funding from public schools and redirects it to private schools, which aren't accountable to taxpayers. White Southerners first fought for freedom of choice after the 1954 Supreme Court decision in Brown v. Board of Education, which desegregated public schools. Seeking a way to avoid integration, these Southerners found a loophole through private education. In 1955 and 1956, conservative white leaders in Virginia resisted the Supreme Court's decision by introducing school vouchers, or tuition grants, to parents. Along with private donations, these vouchers led to the establishment of private schools at the expense of public schools and allowed families to avoid integration. Other southern states soon followed and used their voucher programs to create schools known as segregation academies. Oliver Hill, an NAACP attorney who fought against the separate but equal doctrine in Virginia, opposed these vouchers. He argued, "No one in a democratic society has a right to have his private prejudices financed at public expense." Despite this opposition, influential conservative and libertarian thinkers supported the white southern cause, seeing voucher programs as an opportunity to advance their broader goal of dismantling public education and privatizing government services. They rarely mentioned race and instead spoke of freedom, allowing the movement to gain traction. Fast forward to 2023, and 32 states have now embraced some form of school choice, according to EdChoice. These decisions followed culture debates about the presence of critical race theory, gender, and sexuality discussions in schools. Critics of the policies are concerned. They're worried about the separation of church and state, since a lot of that money will go toward religious schools. Most of all, they fear that expansion of school choice could lead to the end of publicly funded education, exacerbating already existing educational inequalities.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. So first up, school choice has its origins in racism. True or false?
I say false.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because we've been fighting about school choice since we became a country. Right? So going all the way back to the first waves of Catholic immigrants, we've been having the discussion about education and should we have a public education system. the establishment of public education actually created a whole bunch of incentives for a whole bunch of perverse reasons. Reasons I imagine the creators of that video disagree with, such as saying, well, you have this explosion of Catholic schools. We can't have all these papists running around believing things that they shouldn't believe. After all, this is America, goddammit. Therefore, they should go to the local public school. That way we can teach them the right way to right things to think about God. So when think about their concern about operations between, you know, the question of separation of church and state, when you think about, oh my goodness, what this is going to mean in terms of segregation. Well, we were talking about this in very different terms at that time. And it was the public school people who said, no, you can't do that. It was the public school people who said, no, you have to go to your Indian boarding school. You can't be educated locally on the reservation. You got to go to the school we tell you to, because that will bring us together as a society and make sure you know the right way to live. That's the public education system. So which one's the racist ones? Right? The ones that said, we want to be able to send our kids wherever we want our kids' education, not the school funded, so that there's better incentives for teachers to care about the educational outcomes. Or is it the people who just want to force everyone into a public school district and then teach them the right way to live? Right. Yeah. I mean, like that, everyone can play that little rhetorical game as, oh, someone bad thought something similar. Now, I don't imagine the average public school supporter or the average leftist who really opposes school choice thinks about it in terms of, well, we got to make sure those Indians believe the right things.
Right.
Right. But they will happily do that in the other way. That's why that's propaganda. Right. Mm-hmm. It just takes, some racist said or did something close to this. And therefore, you know, that's the origins of it, meaning that's where it came from. When it goes all the way back to the 1800s, discussions about what to do about public education, because public education itself created this conflict.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. And beforehand, before public education system even started, it was just communities pulling their money together to pay for the salary of a teacher mm-hmm. and to teach their children to read. And their home education was proliferating. That is how we did it, because we had miles and miles between the next neighbor down the road. And so, parents had their little school books and they taught their children how to read and write and do basic math. And so, when the weather was good and they could send their child to a neighborhood school, think about Little House on the Prairie. That was not super uncommon, the way that they did school. Sometimes they wouldn't go for seasons because of things that were happening, but they would continue their education. Like all of our founding fathers, most of them were actually educated through private tutors at home.
Hmm. All right. So, Joe, what was the literacy rate at 1900?
Okay. Literacy rate 1900, 50%.
89%. Guess what it is right now?
I'm hoping it's more than 89%.
A study in 2025 is approximately 79% of adults age 15 and older, according to multiple sources from the National Center of Education Statistics. 79%.
So in the last 125 years, our literacy rate has gone down.
Now, there's obviously variations, and there's obviously a difference in demography between that then and now, and what's the role of importing people who don't speak English very well and all that kind of stuff.
Sure, sure.
Those are maybe some other variables, but...
Not a good look.
Hey, so I'm just saying that there's an assumption that if you just make it public, it will therefore proliferate to everybody. And that's not necessarily true, because that's not how the process works. The process of learning something is like where I have an interaction with a person who then like teaches me something. It isn't just, well, we threw money at it, therefore it got better.
Right. And that's another common myth is that we just need to fund the public school system more and give them more money and make it more adequate. And we have been increasing funding, but a lot of the money doesn't end up in the classroom. They end up in the form of additional administrators or bigger inflated salaries or now like mental health counselors who aren't actually helping teach the children. And then the money spent per classroom is actually going down. Mm. So,
yeah. So another one is that they cited is it will drain the funds from the public school. Now, remembering that currently right now, the public school is getting a certain amount of money per kid, per butt and seat over time, something like that. It depends on the state. So if some kids who would be better served leave, they're like, well, that will mean the public school won't do as well. But why are they leaving in the first place? Right? Right. That's the question.
Right.
And is your priority the public school or is it the outcome for children?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want a greater than 34% proficiency rate for your reading and math scores? Maybe do something about that so that the kids, you know, the families don't feel like they're desperate to find another avenue for their kids to actually become proficient. Hmm. Another thing with these school choice programs, they're not always defunding schools. There are many and various different school choice mechanisms like tax credits, tax credit scholarships that are actually privately funded. So there's a couple different models. So you could have a scholarship fund where you are donating into a bucket of scholarship money, and then you get a tax credit for that donation, and then the state can issue that scholarship to a student. Mm. That's not public dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, there's also
and they also oppose those. To be clear, the teachers' unions will oppose those ones too,
using the same argument that you are defunding the public schools, like, because taking a dollar.
Here's the argument: is because you won't have that kid in the school getting butts and seats over TAM. Now that kid's parents is still paying property taxes.
Yes,
that money's still going someplace. So that's a question of the school funding formula, if that's the problem. But that shouldn't even be a problem.
Right.
Right? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, if they're not being served by the product, why are we forcing them into it?
Exactly. Another model is getting just a straight tax credit back for educational expenses that you paid for out of dollar. Hmm. So for my homeschool expenses, we don't have this in Montana, but if I spend $1,000 for a homeschool curriculum, sure would be nice to get a little tax credit of that $1,000 back, you know? So I, you know, could have some kind of recompensation.
That kind of demonstrates the fundamental injustice of the whole thing. Because not only are you paying for your kid's education privately by yourself, but you're also paying property tax at the same time.
Yes.
At least get your own money back so you can educate your own kids.
Right. It's money earmarked for the public schools.
So. Well, and it would be one thing if you were actually, if those tax dollars were predominantly paying for another kid's education. But it sounds like most of it's paying for administration. And salaries for, you know, whomever.
Well, and to be fair, our tax funding system is very complicated. It's very complex, and it is it's very siloed. Like, there is a transportation fund, and it can only be used from transportation. There is a building fund, and it can only be used. Like, they can't say, oh, we have more money in this one bucket, and I have a need in this other bucket, so I could just make a transfer. They don't have the flexibility in their funding formula. So it's the bureaucratic, like, over, I don't know, it's just too heavy. What's the right
ossification? It's just too rigid. It can't itself satisfy the needs of that are needed by the social order, because it's so, and those are so probably heavy. There for reasonable reasons. Like, you don't want slush funds for people to abuse and stuff like that. But is there some place between we literally don't know how to transfer money out of one account to another account if there's like an order of operations that we're qualifying for?
Right.
Like a school's falling apart and we need extra money. But those things seem so ridiculous to me, because I don't know about you, but my property taxes do nothing but go up. And then every single year I get asked for more levies to be issued on top of my property tax in order to do something new with every school. When my numbers are going up, why aren't your budgets going up? That's what I don't understand. Why can't this ever translate?
I don't get it either. It's very frustrating. And especially here, like, we just are having an increase in taxes constantly, and we're weary. Yeah.
Yeah. So the other one is only wealthy families benefit from school choice.
You know what? Wealthy families already have school choice, because they can move themselves from one house into a wealthy zip code and go to that very nicely taken care of public school if they want to. Yeah. They also already have school choice. They could go and they can afford the private school. Mm-hmm. But what we're talking about with school choice are those people stuck in the middle. The people like you and me who we make a little bit too much to afford to get like a low income scholarship for our kids to go to private school, but we make not enough to actually be able to foot the bill for one, let alone two or three or four children to go to that private school. So this actually does benefit mostly, you know, the low and wealthy people, or the low and middle people. But why are we even talking about wealth? Like, why shouldn't we just have the choice to make a decision on how we want to educate our children and look at the kid who's in front of us and say, this kid would do way better if he had self-directed learning, if he had hands-on learning, and we can go that direction. And we're paying into the system. We are prepaying through our property taxes. We're prepaying for education. Mm-hmm. We need to break the concept that it can only be used at public education. I think we can agree that educating children is a public good, mm-hmm. you know, and that's why we fund it and have a free system of education. But we're prepaying that education, and we should be able to direct the payments of where we'd like for those dollars that are earmarked for our kids because we have them, mm-hmm. and we can earmark it to where we want to spend it.
Well, you know what else is a public good? Children.
Yes.
Having enough kids to keep your society growing is a public good.
Yeah.
And then we do everything we can as a social order to make it as hard as possible to have kids and raise them. Right? We'll make sure we fund a school, but right. actually, you know, helping out parents to make sure that they can make sure that their kids are realizing their individual potential. Nah, I'm sorry. That's up to you.
Yeah.
And in fact, make sure you pay your property taxes so you can fund some other kids to go to a private school, to go to a public school.
Yeah.
That's the system. So, obviously, not just wealthy kids, right? I can't hit that enough. Yeah. It is the poorest. If you look at after Katrina, they implemented school choice in New Orleans as a response because they needed flexibility within the system, and they had an opportunity yeah. to get some reform.
All those schools were destroyed from the flooding.
Yeah,
and it was the charter schools that really bridged the gap there.
Yeah, and tell me that was racism. We're talking about New Orleans, right? Tell me that was all about rich kids getting their part. No, it was about funding people to get access to education. Another one. Reason why school choice is blowing up so much right now is because COVID, mm-hmm. right? And so they mentioned in that, oh, well, there's conversations about CRT, conversations about gender. Come on. Like, you got to ask people not to believe their own eyes when we're talking about what is the culture of our education system and what are we actually teaching our kids? And like all these adults who afterwards, parents, all these parents who showed up at school board meetings and started railing, like, I listened in, and what are you telling my kid? That's not the values I believe in. That's not the values I thought we were doing together as a social order. You're doing something totally different.
Yeah.
Yep.
Those people were designated as terrorists.
Yeah.
By the Biden administration. At least suspected terrorists.
Potential.
Right?
Domestic terrorists.
Yeah. Right? Remember that?
Yeah.
And it was the teachers' union who requested the FBI to look into these parents, which is just abhorrent to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just imagine you're and they have to fund that system.
Right.
The injustice of that is they're right. paying the FBI to investigate them as domestic terrorists. Well, they say, I listened in on my kid's Zoom class and didn't like what the parents were saying. I'm trying to make my voice heard in my own democracy, in my local school board.
And they even tried to make the parents say sign a contract saying, I will not listen to my student's classroom when I'm home. What? It's ridiculous.
Come on. That did not happen.
No
it
way.
Certainly did. It oh. certainly did. You know, this is so, so important because the schools try to tell us, the public schools, unfortunately, have gotten way over their skis and they're out of line. And we have to have the conversation of parental rights. Mm. They are our children. And we are entrusting them for 7-8 hours a day. And we are partnering with them, like you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Like, we've entrusted them to you, and we are trusting that you are doing good things. You're teaching them good things and how to be a good human, teaching them these things. We are not expecting you to undermine what we are doing in our home as far as teaching them good values. Mm-hmm. And then when we disagree with you, you're going to ask the FBI to get involved? Excuse me?
Yeah, exactly. Especially because they're forced to pay for it. Number two, because there's something to that question of what are we as America, right? Like, what is our culture? And if our education system's sitting way outside that one in terms of norms and values, you know, like, of course people are going to be like, oh, well, I want options then. I mean, I'm okay if you're teaching them the values that I share. But fundamentally, like, your connection with your kid is something about the things that they actually believe about the world. And if you're forced to send them to a place to educate them a different direction, just like the early progressives are doing to re-indoctrinate Catholics to be Protestant, mm-hmm. are we doing that right now, but with Marxism?
Yeah.
That's a legitimate concern.
It is.
And just to brush that off with like conversations about race and sexuality. I mean, come on. Just don't be silly. okay. So I think we hit it all. That was good. Yeah. So let's talk about the emerging center-right myths of school choice. We're on the five-yard line, guys. 15 states out of 50. We're about to get there, and all of a sudden, you know, someone just sends up, it's like, nah, I'm playing for the other team now.
Who is it? Who's playing for the team?
James Lindsay, of course, your favorite.
Oh my God, really?
No, of all people. Yeah, I mean, like, to be fair, he does call it necessary but insufficient. You know, but there are others. So yeah, we'll dive into that. So we got this article from Real Clear Education, the Dependency Trap: Why School Choice is a False Promise, by Robert Bortons. I'm hooked on phonics, so tell me if I read that wrong.
Seems legit. Sound it out.
Yeah, I cannot read names. I'm terrible.
Speaking of public education.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Helena School Systems. You sent me over this article, Cheryl. What's the case here?
So the case is that school choice is actually a Trojan horse to bring in Marxification and to trap you into new regulations from the government. So what you see from Mr. Borton's fairly often is this phrase, with the shekels comes the shackles, which is an interesting case, but every law is very different. So you have to look at every law when it's presented into the legislature and examine each law for themselves.
Okay, so that's the idea that if the school themselves, if a person who wants to go outside the school system accepts those monies, once they accept that money, the government's going to start regulating what their kid can learn. Yep. And so we need to keep homeschool completely separate from that. And is that happening in school choice areas? When ESAs were introduced into Ohio, did they start regulating homeschool?
Well, I just want to steel man the case first, because this is really an important thing. And I think it's good for us to look at the fact that there have been a lot of things that have been going on to bring those regulations in with Child Protective Services and whatnot. So there is legit fear here. But what we've seen, there's a study that was done, commissioned by the Texas Homeschool Coalition, and they actually looked at the states where school choice programs have been passed and correlated with looking at the homeschool laws. And they've actually seen that there's been no increase in regulation in all of those states. And we've actually seen a trend downward toward deregulation. So, for instance, in Wyoming, they passed a universal ESA. But they also simultaneously rolled back a level of homeschooling regulation. So now they don't even have to alert the county superintendent that they are homeschooling. So they don't have to notify now. Mm-hmm. So that's a major win.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, okay, all right. So what is this idea? The idea that if we give school choice, they will start to regulate public school. Where does that come from? Like, what is the psychological place of that person? It seems like to me that the psychological place of that person is preservation mindset, right? It's we have to protect what we have, and we can't, and we just assume that government's always going to grow and always be terrible and always be run by progressives. And so we can't actually advance the ball, because if we try to advance the ball, there's risks. And so it's a zero risk tolerance effort. But what that doesn't recognize is that there's risks right now. And in fact, there's probably less risk if you advance the ball. Here's why. Government is done by coalitions, right? If I expand school choice and I go from, you know, in a state like Montana, we've got 1 million people. Say, for example, we've got 10,000 homeschool kids. If they're completely separated from the system and they have to pay their property taxes and they don't get any help, when something comes to threaten them, they won't even know about it, right? Because they're completely outside the system. But if they are connected into the system, they do care about what their government's doing, because they do have a direct, you know, financial tie where they're getting some of their own damn dollars back, then they now have 10,000 activists to care, right? How do you expand Medicaid expansion? How do you pass that law in a red state like Montana? Well, you show up with all the people who could be benefit. And then once you defend it, you show up with all the people who are benefiting from it. Mm-hmm. Right? And you pretend like this money's free and there's no trade-offs, right? But in the case of this, what we're talking about is you actually build a constituency so that if they do try to shut down your homeschooling, you can now lobby against it. You actually have political power, because you can now have a reason to organize. You get in your aux cord, you push back against that. So not only is there risk right now, because they could always act right now, if you're in Oregon or something like that, they can crack down on homeschooling if they want to, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing they can do to stop it, because it's a super blue state.
Right.
But if you know, a state like Montana goes from where we're at now, where it's very hard to organize schools and independent schools and homeschoolers in order to go advocate for something. If you actually, you know, you could have, you know, if there's 50 independent schools in Montana, if you got to a part where there are 500, well, now all of a sudden you can show up in mass and you can put pressure on and say, no, don't crack down. My school's great. This school's great. This school's great. Yeah, there are some bad actors, but this school's great. This school, and you're going to affect them. You created a constituency you can now deploy for your own political benefit and defense of the thing that you're trying to do.
Yeah. And there's something like, in general, school choice is totally fine as long as there's no allowance for homeschoolers to have access to those funds. And in general, most homeschoolers are totally fine with school choice as long as it doesn't have a carve out for them. But mm-hmm. as soon as there is a carve out, then they're like, whoa, wait, wait, wait. I don't want that. I'm not interested. But because of COVID, we have a whole new generation of homeschoolers who are in that sticky middle of they have, you know, they're a two home income family. Both of them have to work. They're trying to figure out how to do it. The public school's not working for them. And so they're like, oh, yeah, I would like a tax credit. I would like some kind of scholarship. I would like to find some way to like make this affordable and have the ability to switch. Mm-hmm. So, And there's ways to write these laws, you know, where we're protecting them.
Right.
You know, one of the most important things, and I'm very aware as a homeschooler, like I get their argument and they are valid because you do have child protective services. And in a historical, you know, lead up to of passing homeschool freedom laws in the 80s and 90s, coming and knocking on your door. Mm-hmm. So, and I think we'll get into that a little bit down the road.
We could do it now if you want to.
Yeah.
So we'll get there.
So CPS was just knocking on doors of people who are homeschooling?
Yeah. We have.
Why?
Because we have compulsory
education. Each state's different. So in the state of Virginia, to homeschool, you can say that you want to do it for a number of different reasons. Academic, health reasons, or religious reasons. The Democrats in Virginia passed a law out of their education conference to make it so that you are no longer allowed to homeschool in the state of Virginia for religious reasons.
And for us, that's the only reason to educate anybody.
What is that? What is that even? You have to have a reason to homeschool your kids?
In some states.
What does that mean? What do you have
you to basically fill out a paperwork, something? Check a box, fill it out, send it to some faceless bureaucrat. I mean, it's an automatically approval type process right now, but that doesn't mean it'll be that way in the future. We knew there were people in the 90s that were getting thrown in jail for homeschooling in the United States. There were people in the 80s getting thrown in jail, having their children
removed
from their household for homeschooling in the United States. This isn't a freedom.
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, in Washington, they'll take your kid if you don't give them the gender surgery.
Right.
Yeah. Just like that.
Good example.
We'll take that. We'll take your kid.
Yeah. So in the 1980s, when HSLDA, Homeschool Legal Defense Association, was helping each of the state homeschool orgs get developed so that we could lobby our senators and representatives so that we could have freedom in education. And the reason we did that is because we were tired of being fined. We were tired. Like, early homeschoolers, we wouldn't let our kids out of the house before 3 p.m. because we knew our neighbors would tattle and the truant officer would come. And it's the scariest thing for a woman to be home by herself with three or four kids behind the door and a lady in a suit and a police officer is next to her and they're knocking at your door. And that was a regular thing during that time period. And then the fines that came around that and the children put in foster care. This is in the United States when he was 4, 5, 6 years old, not that long ago.
Wow.
So when people wonder, like, Lee, why are you so against?
Yeah. So that's like setting up the crisis. And I'm very sympathetic, of course, like you're saying, to that person, right, who's reacting to how bad things were because of the progressives and because of the public education mafia, mm-hmm. right, who are pushing to make sure every kid was there. If not, you're a truant.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Just for clarity, who is this being interviewed here on Sean Ryan?
So this is Robert Bortons, who wrote that op-ed, and Lee, his mother, who founded Classical Conversations, which is a wonderful homeschool program that you can actually, if you want, it's a 3-hour show, but they go deep into their model and how they do it. And it's a great program. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But big skeptics from this angle.
Big skeptics.
And we'll dive into it. Let's go into it. We'll do a dive into what our actual beef is with school choice. But now you get a sense of like, this is the preservation mindset. Like, we got these wins in the 80s and 90s by standing up to the system and pushing back, and we got some freedom for homeschooling. Now, what does education choice mean for homeschooling from their perspective?
It's getting money from the government. It's because they don't remember when we used to all get money from the government, how bad it was. And so we just said, leave us out of it. Go do all the dumb stuff you want, but leave us alone. And then by leaving us alone, what happened? We got really strong. And, you know, any type you have a business that does well, the government starts to say, oh, we want to do that. That looks good. And so our popularity has almost been our worst enemy, because now everybody wants to have a classical Christian education, but they don't want to pay for it.
They don't want to put the work in.
And so the government's making it possible for everybody to do that by, we'll give you $7,000 a head for your kids. So if you have four kids.
What do you think about the voucher program?
That's what I'm talking about.
Isn't DeSantis in Florida trying to like implement some type of a voucher
program? We're very against it.
Yeah.
You're very.
Wait a minute. Before they go on, am I a little bit like ticked off that there's just like, you're just being lazy? Isn't that what they just intimated right there?
Yeah.
Right? Quit being so lazy.
It's unfortunate. And
lady, I live in Bozeman.
It's a bit elitist in some ways, you know, right. Like I had to go back to work. I was a full-time stay-at-home mom when the kids were born. We worked really on a, you know, shoestring budget. And I went back to work so that we could afford curriculum and to pay for that curriculum. And that put a lot of strain on our family, where I was working evenings and weekends. Mm. So I'd go off to work. Tim would come home. He would have to fix the dinner, you know, plate the food off the crock pot. Like, that puts strain on families. And that's, I feel like maybe that's a blind spot. Yes, we do need to sacrifice and do what it takes to make a really good, cohesive family. You know, it takes a lot of work. But today's families in this economy, especially where we live, is very different. Like, where we have two people having to work, and not everybody is necessarily going to be like successful in a good positive setting for homeschooling. Like, a private school might be better, a micro school might be better.
Yeah,
you know,
or a private school, depending on my kids' learning potential and what they're into. Right, some Montessori works for some kids, Acton works for kids, classical Christian works for kids. Yeah. Like, all these things work, and not all of them can be done by homeschool quite as easily. I mean, you can't do Acton with homeschool. You got to have a combination, or you got to have other kids around. Otherwise, the model doesn't work. What are we talking about here, right? Where we're talking about, you're saying you have to fit into your expectations of what you think I should do with my life in order for me to advance this, other than doing good. And what's this assumption that just because she's saying leave us out of it? Well, aren't all education choice programs opt-in?
Yeah.
No, do any of them force kids to take an ESA?
No. All of these are voluntary programs, and that's the thing.
Why oppose it then?
Right. Why are you making a decision for somebody else?
Yeah.
You don't have to take the money. You
That's
don't have to participate.
That's why you don't like the public school system in the first place.
Right. You
it's because you're
it
forcing
out.
People. It's you're saying, well, how dare you opt out of the public school system like I did, but you're receiving money, and I don't like that. Well, I'm sorry, but you have to pay your property taxes regardless, lady. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean to her personally, but I'm just saying that person, that idea set, why the ideas matter so much is because we're on the 5-yard line. We're right there where we could actually break the monopoly that is preventing so many kids from reaching their true potential. Why are you spending this time not celebrating that, making sure that you can, it's opt-in, and then leaving it alone?
Yeah.
Why you got to stand in the way?
Yeah. And we can build in beautiful, wonderful protections for people who do participate, so that they don't have to go and get their curriculum pre-approved. They don't have to say, you know, for instance, in Colorado, I could get curriculum free through a partnership with one of their charter schools if I homeschooled, but I wasn't allowed to choose a faith-based curriculum. Mm. But I could choose to go that direction or not. I could choose to just buy the faith-based myself. So it's always voluntary.
Right. And then these bills are being drafted now specifically to make sure you're protected for making your values-based choices, right?
Absolutely.
They're not written like, oh, we're going to make sure the teacher's union decides what you could teach your kid. These are designed so that the parent can decide, because that is the whole damn point of the program.
Absolutely. For instance, here's Arizona's education savings account statute. This states that a school shall not be required to alter its creed, practices, admissions policy, or their curriculum. That's fantastic. You write it into a bill, boom, that's really great protection.
Right.
In West Virginia's ESA, it states specifically that no provider is required to alter its creed, practices, admissions policy, hiring policy, or curriculum to participate in the program. Mm. Montana's law that unfortunately failed, we had similar, very, very strong safeguards that had a similar language with altering the creed or practices. Mm-hmm. And we also had really great language that said this bill is intended to maximize parental freedom and autonomy.
Yeah. And tell me if this is going too far, but blink twice. Did the homeschoolers oppose?
Some did, but the big coalition of mm-hmm. homeschoolers, they came in as an informational witness.
Okay.
So that means, and we were...
That's better than posing.
it was wonderful. Yeah. We actually this bill was being worked on for probably 9 months leading up to it, and I was able to, bring some guidance to say, homeschoolers need to be assured that they're going to have protections, that they don't have to review their curriculum. And when it came down to it, they were able to show it to the HSLDA, who opposes ESAs, but they support tax credits. And the mm-hmm. Montana bill was a tax credit.
Yeah. Well, we have to do tax credits in Montana.
Yeah.
Because of a Supreme Court decision. So it's really the only avenue you can do.
But it's the most private way. It's actually great because it isn't government money, and it is, it's not an appropriation, I should mm-hmm, say. Mm-hmm. And so HSLDA reviewed it. They had a couple points. And there's a firewall where the people who participate in this bill under this legal status is now called a MAP student, mm-hmm. and not a homeschooler. So all the homeschoolers, they stay under the same set of code
right.
in the law. And they
they're
can
completely
volunteer.
Left alone.
Yes, but if you did, we didn't have curriculum mandates or any extra regulation. There was actually a law that said the superintendent of public instruction or any other agency may not regulate the educational program of a qualified education provider. Right. So we have... we can go forward with this stuff with wisdom. And the benefit, at least in our state, is having seen 46, 47 other states go through this. And so we've seen, where some snags were in the road, some potholes. And so we were able to, choose the best of all those programs that would be maximally freedom for homeschoolers.
Joe, are we blowing right past you right now? I know you probably haven't. We're deep in this. I want to make sure that we're not going past our listeners' ear here.
I think that people might have some questions, but I think that that's to be expected with something that is nuanced. And I think if you have questions, drop them in the comments and we'll get back to them and join the Discord. Cheryl is an active Discord member with us. And, I think you would be happy to answer people's questions if they jump in there.
And I do this all the time. I mean, I actually manage a resource called ednavigatemt.com. And so we have explainer guides to all the different school choice options that we have here currently in Montana. We don't have a lot of options. There's a lot of more work to be done. But there are some opportunities where you can go on there. There's actually a special needs education savings account that actually the applications open on May 1st. And they'll be open through June 1st. And so that's a specific ESA that's just for students with special needs. And that actually helps them so much. And we could talk about some of those, some of the parents that I talk to, who have just been beating their head against the wall, trying to navigate the IEP, the individual education plan process in the public schools. And for whatever reason, these are just incredibly difficult and they can be frustrating. And children who have special needs, it's not always the best environment to be in a classroom with 30 other students. And mm-hmm. so they make adjustments for them and create a plan. But we actually passed this bill that will allow $6,000 to $8,000 for that student to go out of system, and they can use that money for tuition, for tutoring, for homeschool curriculum, mm-hmm. their specialized therapies, and it could be a really, really big help to families. Mm.
So we got a little bit more on here. I want to make sure she can fully build out her opposition here.
Against it.
And he spends a lot of time talking in these states, so you can explain some of the different ones that you're up against.
Again, this is from just a perspective of the three governments, the civil government has no responsibility over the human mind. And so we don't think the civil government should pay for it. And we recognize as legislators, you've got a hammer. Everything looks like a nail. Basically, the only thing they can do is distribute money. So we understand why they're wanting to do it. And we're glad they want to get kids out of the public school system. But why is it a public school system? Because the public is paying for it with tax dollars. Uh-huh. So they're not actually getting kids out of the public school system. They're actually turning private schools and homeschoolers into public school students. And every single state that implements it, their budgets go way up. So now they have to increase taxes, which makes it so fathers have to work harder to be able to provide for their students. And, you know, best case scenario, you're getting a temporary tax break, but you're going to be paying for that the rest of your life. Like, yeah, you might be getting some welfare checks from the government for 12 years while your kid is, you know, under the age of 18. But as soon as they turn 19, you got to start paying your taxes to cover those expenses. And so it's I wish it was the truth. I wish it would work. But that's what they did in Sweden. They've got all of Europe basically has some sort of voucher system. Their education is terrible.
So I got a question.
Is Sweden's education system terrible?
You know, I don't have the stats on that, but I don't think it's as terrible as
it's not. They crush us in scores. I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, we're like number 30
yeah.
in the pack.
Yeah. Additionally to that, I think Sweden's tax rate is high because they have universal health care, not because of their school system being overly expensive. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. So do states need to increase their budgets on education after passing school choice?
No. No, it's actually school choice saves them money because if you think about it, you spend $14,000 per student is kind of the average nationally of what gets allocated to
Courtney Andrews said $20,000.
Well, it depends on the state. Like yeah. I think I think Texas is like $18,000 to $20,000 per student. In Montana, our average is just under $14,000. It depends on what state you're in. Mm-hmm. I think Baltimore schools spend like $25,000. And Baltimore schools are like zero proficiency. Like they have, I don't know what they're doing. Mm. I don't know what they're doing. I mean, their buildings are very, very old. And so there's, you know,
there's a lot more maintenance needed and all that
maintenance
kind of stuff.
Needs,
but, yeah.
But still, oh my goodness.
Right. I mean, like move to a new building or fund the kids and then those schools will pop up that can service those kids.
But if you go to like an ESA system where you're giving $7,000 per student, which is about the average for these ESA programs, most of them that I'm seeing are coming in about that amount. Guess what? That's actually a net cost savings to the state. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
14,000 minus 8,700. Yeah, you're spending a lot less.
And to be clear, the public school is still getting that other 7,000 in your property taxes.
Right.
So you're still subsidizing the public school.
Yeah.
So like what are they complaining about?
Yeah.
They don't even have to teach that kid. They don't have to spend the hours with that kid. They don't have to spend the effort to discipline that kid or to coach that kid or any of that kind of stuff. They just get the money in the mail.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting arguments, you know, that, I mean, Did it seem to you like he was doing that thing again, like saying that school choice is welfare?
Yeah, right.
I don't think that we should really be thinking about it that way.
Well, because I think part of it is they're saying the dollars have to come with accountability, and so the government will eventually do that.
Right.
But I think my point is that if the government comes for that, you now have a constituency to fight it. And the government can come for you at any time. They are a monopoly on force. Now, I get it. His vision for government is that there shouldn't be any public schools. I'm with you, bro. Yep. Let's do it. But I'm afraid you're operating in a fantasy land, right? Where you're not dealing with reality, where we do have a government that's been doing public schooling for 100 years. So how do we move that over to the best we can to maximize the returns for kids? And you have to just look at the face of the studies and the basic economic logic and say, not worth it. Because my small group is a little bit worried about something that might happen. Not something that is happening, something that might happen.
And to be fair, you know, they have had different weird amendments being added to bills that would add, you know, that kind of crazy stuff. You know, there's one that would have required students to have attended public school before they could participate in an ESA. So they'd have to go back into the system. And our special needs ESA does have that requirement as well, that they had to have been counted in that A and B funding in order to be eligible. So that's unfortunate, but these are ways that we can change it. Like, write good laws,
right?
You know, vote down bad laws,
right?
You know, like,
Well, okay, so there was a big dialogue on the right not too long ago, led by, I can't remember the guy's name right now, but it was basically, it was the anti-CRT stuff, mm-hmm. right? And the whole case was, we should ban CRT. And the conservatives go like, whoa, we can't do that. We can't be banning CRT. And the right wing's perspective is like, so what are you going to do then? You're just going to do nothing? Right? If it was, we should ban, racist eugenics from being taught in our schools, everyone would say, of course we should, because racist eugenics is terrible and awful. Well, if CRT is just the Marxist version of that, then why wouldn't we? Right? And then, like, you're on offense. You're doing something. You're not just passively waiting for something to change and hoping without actually doing anything that would actually result in the world you want. Mm-hmm. Right? And I get the yuckiness of that argument, right? I don't like banning thoughts. I think I like free speech. But when we're talking about a public system that we're all forced to pay into that is shaping the minds of the next generation, maybe we should play a role somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and if the role here is get active in reforming the system you have, might require you to actually go change something, change some laws, do some political activism.
Right.
Not just sit back and just hope that things change. If you just get enough kids, convince enough families to be able to afford to homeschool, which you can't. Right. It's just.
Yeah. It's unrealistic to expect that. And I understand where they're coming from as far as saying this is what I think is the highest and best is the homeschool and to give them a classical Christian education. That makes sense. I get that. But that's not realistic for everybody. And it's not necessarily everybody's goal. We all have different values. And we all have different, religions that we come from. We are in the United States of America with many different cultures mixing in. And so what we need to do is embrace the concept of education pluralism, which is what they do in Europe. They have they have education, and they divvy out, a base dollar amount to these different schools, and you can have multiple different schools. And this is where you can release that pressure valve of these culture wars. Mm. Instead of saying this is the thing that we're going to teach in our behemoth monolith of our public schools, we're going to release some and say, we're going to create a Christian school here. We're going to create, a secular school over here. We're going to have a school here that focuses on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And people can choose where they want to send their kids. And mm-hmm. I think that's part of parental rights. I mean, and, from the Christian right-wing perspective, that's not necessarily something that's super easy to palate. Mm. But you have to, look at the fact that not everybody is a Christian in this country, and not everybody wants their child raised with Christian values. And that's okay. They have their own values, mm-hmm. But we have different sets of morals, and we should be able to, direct that teaching.
Well, if you're that Christian that wants a more Christian country, why wouldn't you embrace a school choice program that allows people to send their kid to religious schools yep. according to the values of the parents, so the parents don't have to fight the indoctrination of their
exactly.
kids? I mean, if you think the government's your enemy that's indoctrinating your kids to be Marxist gender ideologists, why would you want more of your child's peers to go to that school? Why wouldn't you want to empower their parents with the options that they otherwise couldn't do
yeah.
to go get access to other educational opportunities?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not a strategic mindset. It's not thinking about it in terms of the power realities at play.
Yeah. But what gets caught is are the children who are in the middle, who are just caught between, a failing system. We're in a good location where we have fairly adequate public schools, but it's not necessarily, speaking to the heart of that child, making their heart sing. Like, I was really moved by your story of your son, how this particular school has made him come alive. And that's what I want for every child. It's not fair to us as adults to be fighting over these high level things while our kids are drowning or wasting away, or they're being bullied to death. They're fighting with mental health issues, or they're questioning their gender identity, and mm-hmm. they're stuck in this middle. And so we need to think about these kids and look at the kids and make those decisions as best for them, and figure out how we as parents can help them bloom.
Right.
Right.
I mean, 100%. I mean, yeah, to unpack that story. I mean, my son, he went to a Christian school, a private Christian school, with pre-K up until first grade, and liked it there, but it wasn't the values that I objected to. It was the way they did the school was within the classical education model that was more similar to the Prussian model, honestly, of, you know, bell rings, you go to the class, the teacher teaches, the kids all sit there and learn, you go do some recess, you come back, that sort of thing. He's like me. He's a little bit, I don't know,
different.
Yeah, he has a harder time with authority.
He's inquisitive,
he's intelligent, and he has a harder time just sitting there listening. He wants to talk, and he wants to engage with the ideas and the things being said. He wants to react and move. He's a boy, he likes to move a lot. So it wasn't working for him. So we found a school that did. And that school was an active model school that really just, it just took off for him. I mean, he's matured so much over this time. And unfortunately, the economic model is not that sustainable because most parents can't afford more than a certain tuition amount. And, you know, the school can't ask for more because the parents aren't there, right? Can't provide more. And the expenses are real. Like, you got to take a guy, and this guy is a highly qualified teacher, a math teacher, who is a principal at a school, and he's like passionate about education. He's got a kid, and he's like, I don't want to put him in that education system. I want to put him in a better one. I want to make a school for my kid. But he can't get the market because, well, I'm paying $15,000 in property taxes every year or more, and I gotta find a little extra money to give him for tuition. If I had just a fraction of that back, totally doable. Yep. We could have made that work. But unfortunately, now his school's closing down because they had to select for the right families, didn't find the right families. And then, you know, you got to raise tuition if you have a smaller group of kids and can't afford that.
And these teachers need to eat. They need to support their families as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I want to pay them.
Yeah.
But damn it, I'm sending all my money to the government. So just give me a little bit back, please. That's all I'm asking. And unfortunately, you know, MAPS didn't work out in Montana. But like, that's true for my son, but it's true for so many other kids who will never even get the chance to discover that a different educational model that focuses on the kid teaching himself alongside other kids and like developing culture and all that kind of stuff would be a better way for them to progress. They'll never even get to discover that because they'll never get to experiment because they're just stuck in a public school.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just to circle back on like having that expectation that people just sacrifice and just live less. And, you know, that doesn't work for everybody. I'm like, not like most people are not living high on the horse. Like, they are already just getting by.
It's kind of rough in these streets. You know what I mean? Keep going.
So I had one family who reached out to me, and she has one daughter who was thriving in a Montessori model. Mm. And they're paying, you know, it's private tuition. And they came from Wisconsin, who has multiple different avenues of school choice. They has a tax credit for homeschooling. Mm-hmm. And she was wondering if there was some kind of thing like that here, because she's thinking her next child is coming up, getting closer to school age. And she's like, oh, my daughter's thriving so well. I don't want to take her out of the school. And mm-hmm. I really want my younger daughter to be able to go there. But we can't do two tuitions mm-hmm. at the same school. Is there something? And, you know, unfortunately, I had nothing to tell her other than, well, there's this this income-based scholarship program, which is a great model. Guess what? She makes just a little bit too much for that. Mm-hmm. And so here we are. This is school choice isn't for the wealthy. It's for the normal average people mm-hmm. who are just trying to get by. Dual income family who still is, you know, not making ends meet for private school. Mm-hmm. So
how dare anyone like just intimate for a second or just suggest that person's a welfare queen for asking for their own tax dollars back.
Or that she's lazy.
Or that lazy. Yeah.
It's sad. I mean,
And that's the thing is like, if they're asking for this pushback at the end of the day, right? I mean, like, these arguments didn't have to be made, but they're making them. So we're debunking them.
And at the end of the day, these programs are voluntary. Mm-hmm. You do not have to take a tax credit. You don't have to. Mm-hmm. You can just stand on your principles and say, I'm not going to do that. And that's
right.
Fine.
Right. Do it. If you want to do that, go do that. All right. So Montana, where are we at now? Lost on MAPS. Going to come back next session and bring MAPS again, bring another bill.
What is MAPS?
MAPS was our, go ahead. Yeah. You're the one who wrote the bill. I don't know why I'm describing it.
I didn't write the bill.
Well, you're involved in writing the bill.
So it was our version of a universal school choice program. So when we say universal school choice, we mean every student, every dollar, and every option available. So that means that they get a comparable state and local pot of money that they can use. So we basically subtract out that federal piece of it. So we give them the whole shebang of the money to use toward any school option that they want. If it's a private school, a tutor, an online program, they could stay in public school. And every child being available, eligible to use it. So it's not income based or like special needs based. Mm-hmm. So our bill was a tax credit model. It was a very hybrid model. It was the first of it of its kind because we have a very unique constitution. So we have a tax credit scholarship model that was actually went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. David mm-hmm. has a little bit more insight into that, but it basically said that donations that were given to the scholarship fund are private dollars, and it's not an appropriation from the government, and therefore the private receiver of those funds can use those funds toward any school that they want, whether it was religious or not. So that was super awesome. That was a big decider and actually overturned the Blaine Amendment for mm-hmm. most of the states that have them, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the Blaine Amendment was, remember we're discussing the Catholics and how, you know, the public school system was kind of designed in part, not in full, but in part, I'm not going to do what they did, to move Catholics into Protestantism and not allow them to do their school. Well, basically what it says, you can't fund religious education, right? That was what the Blaine Amendment said. And what two real findings on that, it was called the Espinoza case, was one, tax credits are not public funds. Duh. You know, they're your funds and you're just not giving to the government. Two, that the government can, as long as what the government's doing is value point neutral, people can be allowed to decide to spend on what they want, yeah. basically.
Yeah.
So it just, you know, think about it like a SNAP program. You know, you get that money, you can spend it on what you want. You don't have to go to a certain grocery store or a values-based grocery store. You can go to the grocery store and buy the thing that you want. The basic idea being that the government isn't directing you to take it to a public school. Therefore, it's not the government funding of a religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, it was a really, really big, huge win for school choice.
Yeah, but that's why tax credits are the only thing we could do, because that's the only like constitutional Supreme Court like narrow hole that the school choice people have in Montana due to that. And we have a constitution that stands in the way mm-hmm. a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. yeah. So this is a bill that built on that concept, and we had two points of entry. First off was through a scholarship program where people could donate into a certain pot. And then families could apply for a scholarship out of that pot up to, it originally started at $7,000, but then it was amended down to be a lower amount, $3,500. So that was one point of entry. And then they can use the funding however they want. And another point of, so that was income-based, so 350% of the federal poverty limit, they could apply for that scholarship. If you made more than 350% of that poverty level, you could apply for a direct tax credit for your own personal taxes and just hold on to your receipts like you claim a tax credit for taxes at the end of the year. And they were capped, so there was a limit onto the total amount, so that's so you're not going to blow out the government budget, so they had an idea of what to expect. And we had some really good provisions, like I was saying before, showing that greater autonomy, maximum flexibility to meet educational needs of the parent and their child. So we had parental rights built in there, which was really great, empowering a parent to direct the education of the parent's child, flexibility to use it. Like I said earlier, no agency may regulate the educational program, and the qualified education providers must be given maximum freedom to provide the educational needs of the participating students without government control. It is very, very masterfully written. I was so, so impressed and blessed from my homeschool background and knowing how important it is to make sure that there's protections and that regulation, there's no door for that regulation. Like, it felt super watertight. Mm. And we had a lot of support. We had support from both the House and the Senate leadership, which is important for legislation. We had support of some moderates on board, which is also important in our state, you know. And at the end of the day, we had some of these rumors that, from the homeschool right, that this is some conspiracy of the UN to take over and regulate our homeschool and then turn all private and homeschoolers into government school drones.
Yeah, that's the other argument. And I know we're running a little bit long. Don't leave. I know we're talking about Montana. So even on Montana, definitely listen to this, because this is a battle that's going to happen in many other states.
And this article was passed around all throughout our state, all throughout Texas, all throughout Wyoming, as they have been battling to get their universal school choice bills passed.
So what is this argument?
So this argument, these 7 points right here, if you kind of hover there, this kind of the overall her arguments in a nutshell, and then she goes on to like expand them out. In my opinion, they're all very tenuous arguments, like loose connections. Oh, this person spoke at this one thing, and therefore he's a UN spokesperson. Mm-hmm. Or that person studied this one thing, you know, 50 years ago when he was in college, therefore he's some, you know, UN drone. Or it's quite crazy. Corey DeAngelis is a fantastic guy, who's all over the internet sharing about school choice. His big motto is fund students, not systems. Mm-hmm.
So Corey DeAngelis did something that was related to the UN at some point, and therefore he is what, a Manchurian candidate? I don't understand.
Something like that. And so here? Now, yeah. And when I think that they're making the mistake of seeing a coalition. Who knows? I don't know like how much he has actually come out and said, I have no connection with you, UNESCO. I am not their spokesperson. This is completely false.
Joe, UNESCO is the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization.
How did you know I was going to ask?
Yeah, I just know how you are. I know you, buddy. Yeah, so UNESCO and him partnered at some point to talk about school choice, or he talked to them about school choice.
Did was they put his picture on their website, and as a proponent of school choice. So
wait a minute. You're telling me that there's a guy who made a name for school choice, and then school choice became more and more popular as a way to advance education reform, so that we don't have a public monopoly smashing kids into a system that doesn't serve them. And then the UN started to think that's a pretty good idea, and we're going to think maybe that's a good idea for many states that are struggling with their education system.
And maybe we should capture that.
Well, maybe, or maybe they just like school choice now. I don't know. But whatever it is, they said, Corey DeAngelis, good guy, doing some interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And that's it?
And then Corey said, hey, take my picture off of your website. Mm-hmm. I did not authorize you to do that. And that's the end of the story. So
that's the basis, and that it's a UN conspiracy, is because they put his name on the website?
Yes.
His name and picture?
Oh, yes. It sounds very similar to the the WF Young Global Leaders thing with like Tulsi Gabbard and Vivek Ramaswamy. Their pictures appear.
Right.
Whether or not they wanted them to be there, and now they're, of course, WEF puppets. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So the political strategy that is so strange, right? Because if your enemy starts to support what you're doing, that's when you've won, right? Am I being the crazy person? Okay, so
is this some 4D chess from the UN to say we're going to support this and then get all the the conspiracy people to not support it and so it fails?
right. Maybe they know their own brand.
It is a very curious thing when you have the homeschoolers who are partnering to defend the monopoly of the government education system.
Right.
It is a very odd thing, and you do have to kind of look into it. Like, do we realize what we're doing here? Education, school choice means more freedom. It gives parents more freedom to choose what they want to do. And it pulls you out of those government systems that are already aligned with UNESCO's priorities.
Right,
they are already implementing all of those things.
Yeah.
And so you're pulling them out. And we need to dial it back again and think, okay, for that school founder who started the Acton Academy, did you think, oh, I want to raise global citizens, and I really like what the UN is doing, so I'm going to start my own little micro school, and then I'm going to make all these little mini globalists, right? That is not what they're thinking. That is not what people are thinking. They're thinking, right. I want to do something different for these kids. Mm-hmm. I want to educate them. I want to expand their resources and help let them innovate.
Right.
Right?
Okay, so even if it was a 40 chests from UNESCO, and they, or that they, what they really want to do is get in. And James Lindsay makes this point. We're not going to actually react to him today, but he makes this point that, like, well, they're already ahead of the curve. They're already anticipating school choice coming, so they're already trying to build in institutions and private education to do that. So you'll go to private education websites, and some of the schools will have diversity, equity, inclusion in it. Therefore,
it's don't do school choice. Over.
I don't even know. I don't. I mean, like, he does say it's necessary but insufficient. Don't get me wrong, but that's also our case. We're also saying, well, you got to craft the bill right, and you got to make sure it isn't forcing anyone into the system. You got to make sure people can still opt out if they want to.
Right.
So, like, what are we talking about? Okay. So Betsy DeVos is also part of this.
Yes, because Betsy DeVos is a very wonderful lady. I read her book last year, all about her story and her heart for education freedom. Mm-hmm. And they have a foundation, and they give to a lot of different organizations. They've donated to help spearhead voucher programs and scholarships so that low-income inner-city kids have access to a good, healthy education.
Right. That's a problem.
And some of the organizations they don't like. So
we got the scary map.
Yeah.
Scary mats are really scary. So if you don't know who any of these organizations are, I'm sure it's really scary.
You got to keep it still.
It sounds really scary.
I can't
scary.
Read it when you're
Oh, okay. And no, I'm just trying to look around. All right. So let's talk about the middle one. Alec, what is the American Legislative Exchange Council? I can tell you who they are. American Legislative Exchange Council is a conservative organization that works to partner to create model legislation so that legislators who are conservative have ideas to pass conservative legislation. Is Nikki Truesdell, that's the person who wrote this, is she conservative?
I believe so.
She's not a liberal.
No, she even has an article called something like, ESAs or vouchers are not a conservative policy.
Okay. All right. So the American Legislative Exchange Council works to organize conservatives into like a cohesive whole that can then go advocate for the stuff. Now, sometimes because they're a fully private organization, sometimes they can get a little cronyist here and there. Like they have good things and bad things. Not all their legislation's perfect. Duh. Legislation's never absolutely perfect. What we're dealing with here is words, right? So the fact that people give to them and that they support school choice is not sketchy at all, because this has been an idea that's been floating around in conservative circles for quite some time. I don't know that. State Policy Network, big group of think tanks. What's wrong with this?
Mountain bunch States, of idea people.
They advocate for small government, free market principles.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
What's the problem? Coke Industries. Large petro, and lots of other things, actually, not just petro. It started in petro, but now it goes in all kinds of other stuff.
Evil conservative billionaires.
Well, who have funded free market stuff forever and don't take a dime from the federal government.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, they take the same subsidies everyone's in their industry takes, because otherwise they wouldn't be competitive in those industries. But, come on. Like, what's your case? I think the Mountain States Policy Center, they're just a think tank. The American Federation for Children. It's Betsy DeVos's child, right? Her nonprofit, the thing that she did in order to advocate for children. What's sketchy about this?
They're all working together, and that's bad.
The map looks like a spider, and I don't like spiders.
Spider's that's what's scared. Bad.
Yeah, they're working together to bring school choice and to advocate for good policy, and that's not a good thing.
Well, what would it look like to win? So what would winning look like? It would look like a bunch of people coming together to do a thing. Like, what do they expect?
People coming from all walks of life with different various ideas to champion one common good. In this case, it's school choice. Yeah. And it's for our children to have adequate access to customizable education.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
What's the problem?
I don't know.
What's the problem?
I guess
what is the model of victory outside of getting money and people together to advocate for things, especially in a country of 350 million people with 50 different states, 50 different constitutions, all kind of local laws? Like, how else do you do it? And then, of course, if the left starts coming our way on something, why wouldn't we say, yes, please? Because that's how you win. You need 50 plus one, guys. There's no other way. You got to build a coalition. So maybe you partner with UNESCO if they became a partner. So what? Who cares? I'm not even saying he did. I'm just saying in the worst case scenario, he did. Who cares? As long as they're supporting school choice and that's the right policy, why wouldn't you?
And there's many left of center organizations that advocate for school choice as well that are not just conservative or right of center. And so this is, in my opinion, I think school choice should not be a you know, partisan football.
Yeah.
We are talking about the future of our children. We're talking about the future of our country. Can they read?
Yeah.
Do they understand what happens when they vote for that mill levy?
Right.
That their taxes are going to go up.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Your outrage is justified. I want more of it. Keep hitting me with it.
Oh,
please.
My goodness.
Because that's where we're at. I mean, we're at a spot where we are so close to winning. We have the culture.
Yeah.
And the last thing we can have now is a spirit killing. Yeah. Oh, you actually have been manipulated this whole time. It's all a giant Koch brother conspiracy in order for the UN to take over America. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, that's the exact opposite of what they believe and everything they've done. Like, you got to actually have some evidence for this specious claim that you're bringing, and they have none.
Right. And that's why this is very, very tenuous. Like, they have these concepts, and it's like, you know what, guys? I don't think you're making you're drawing these conclusions that aren't there.
Yeah.
And, you know, that causation and correlation thing is not happening. Like, you're just putting it together and making this big, huge meatloaf out of it. It's not there.
Right. But the flat earthers of education.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, to be fair,
I thought we were together on this. I thought we agreed the globe was round and that we should have education choice to improve educational outcomes. But all of a sudden, everyone's like, well, maybe not, you know. Sorry.
I will fight against the government and government regulation with the best of them.
Yeah.
You know, I do not want additional, you know, regulation. I was on the front lines fighting for my rights to not wear a mask during COVID and fighting for the rights for medical freedom, that I don't have to put any products in my body that I don't want to. And so for the people, I think on the conservative right, they are very much aware, especially with our recent history, that oversight is happening, that government wants to, I don't know, people tend toward authoritarianism, and I'm trying to wrap my mind around that, because I tend toward freedom, and I don't understand the people who tend toward control and obedience. Like, it's another reason why I didn't fit super great in schools, because I wanted to dance to the beat of my own drum. I didn't want to be put in a box. I was a bird that was in a cage, and I needed to be let free. Mm. So when it comes to freedom, I understand that. They want to maintain maximum freedom. Write a good bill and pass a good bill that puts it right in there and provides for the maximum freedom of parents to choose and direct that education.
Couldn't have summarized it better. If you are still on the other side and you're saying this is just a giant global cabal, you guys don't know what you're talking about, I want to hear in the comments what you're going to do to change the status quo. Because the status quo is not going to change unless you do something. So what's your idea? Otherwise, shut it. I'm tired of it. It drives me crazy.
And on that note, friends, Cheryl, tell us one more time where people can go to find out more about the resources that we have for education freedom in Montana.
Yeah, you can go to ednavigatemt.com. There's a parents page. There's a page for early stage schools that are going to start moving along. You can look at it and get a school finder map, put in your zip code, find schools that are available for you. And if you want a personal one-on-one consultation, you can click the Get Help button, and it'll email me directly, and I can help you navigate the things that are coming up, especially that special needs ESA that's opening up here soon.
Awesome. Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us and enlightening us.
Thanks for having me. It's been awesome.
Great.
Guys, thanks for watching. This has been Human Reaction. For Cheryl and David, my name is Joe Sheehan. We'll see you in the next one. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.